So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this International. I'm Pete. I'm with Timothy. Timothy, how's it going, man?
Oh, it's going good. Top 50's coming out, getting a lot of tweets and people talking about that, which is nice. It's always good to have people enjoy what you're doing. Otherwise, same old, same old. We missed a week. It was my fault. I had family engagements, but I think it kind of worked out with the TV schedule, you know, last week and this week having some shorter episodes. I think it kind of will be nice to just have it combined here. But how you been, Pete?
I'm doing pretty good. Saw Star Wars last night, so I'm ready to give all the spoilers here. No, I'm not going to do that. But I would check it out. It's definitely worth your time and effort. Heading out to IHWE in Fort Worth on Sunday for a pretty fun show. We have Martin Stone, Danny Burch. I'm guessing it's one of his last indie dates. Because I think he's officially signed now with NXT. Because I've seen it where it's mentioned at other places, like this will be his final show here. And so I'd assume it's the same thing. But, you know, he's not a regular in Fort Worth or anything. So I can understand them not publicizing it as his final date in Fort Worth or something versus Chip Day. So I think that'll be a pretty fun match. Kikitaro versus Andy Dalton. The match I'm most looking forward to is Gary J, who I'm a fan of. I've watched him a long time, and he's going to be working that guy Rex Andrews we saw on that Inspire show maybe a month or so ago, who seemed like a really good mat worker, who seemed like he had a lot of upside and could be a guy to keep an eye out from the Texas Indies. Since I feel like Texas is really making more of a buzz lately on guys who are, it's an area now, it's becoming an area where you can really find some raw, good talent. Like we've seen Keith Lee and Sammy Guevara in the last year or two really come out of Texas. And I think Rex Andrews is in that same type of mold and stuff. You only saw that, the only time you've seen him was worth that one ACH match, right?
That's the only time I've seen him, yeah. But you got him, both of them, Dahlia Doom, Alley Cat now coming out more. So, yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Texas is producing some guys, so it might be the next one to break out here.
Yeah, who knows, you know. So a lot of stuff. So I'm excited, looking forward to that show. There's plenty of other, there's other matches too, but those are the ones that really piqued my interest. So I'm real excited about that. What else going on with you, man?
Not much. Trying to keep up with everything going on in wrestling. Like I said, the top 50 is always a big one. It's like 7 hours.
Yeah, I'm gonna give you feedback on it because that's something I've been saving for my, because I'm taking the train to Fort Worth, and that's like a 4.5 hour train ride, 4.5 hour, 5 hour train ride. So that'd be like perfect for the train and. So I'll hear and I'll either agree with you or to say balderdash on some of your picks.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't want to get too much into it because I haven't listened to you and Quinnen yet. How about Eric Royal? Did he pop up on your list?
Definitely made my list. Okay. Moderately high. Probably my second highest CWF guy behind Trevor Lee, I would say. He's up there pretty
good. The more I'm thinking about it, the dude's having a pretty sneaky, really great year.
No, realistically, yeah. Had a lot of great matches, especially I think what helps him a lot compared to other CWF-only guys is his Nova Pro stuff is all fantastic. So he's got a lot of really good Nova Pro matches on his resume as well this year. Plus just some of the best heel work in wrestling when you really think about it, which is something you can kind of get into as we review some of these shows. I think that there's a... There's definitely some standout, I think, especially in, I guess I could spoil it, the WXW kind of, there's some definite standout there with some real heel stuff going on and some people really working crowds well. And he definitely stands out as one of the top kind of working crowd type guys who's just like so good because of that. So he ends up pretty high. There's some interesting kind of back and forth between me and Quentin. And our top five was remarkably similar, which was kind of, I guess, not what you'd expect. We last year weren't that close. We realistically are not usually this close. But this year, I think that there were some guys who were just kind of undeniably great that it's hard to not have them in your top five area.
Did you abstain from AJ Styles again this year and get heat or?
I haven't gotten any heat yet, but I made a pretty clear point. I think that people pretty much agreed with me, or at least not agreed, but understood where I'm coming from. I was very, very close to putting AJ Styles on my list, but I just felt like it would be dishonest. That was really it.
If I'm not mistaken, I think I called you a hypocrite last year on having put one guy on the WWF on it, but not AJ or something.
I would say this year I had a few people from NXT. That was it. And,
that's fair.
And that's it. I mean, not a single
if you abstain from the whole main roster, then I have no problem. I just always find, I mean, I'm not just you and people in general say I can't put AJ because I haven't watched WWF enough, but here you go. And someone will put Cesaro on or they'll really go off book and try to put somebody over and stuff like that. But,
right.
But that's
the
fair.
The only people that were possibly, the only WWE people possibly making my list would have been AJ and Roman. And, I mean, like I said, maybe Braun. But, I mean, I just didn't watch enough. The TV product doesn't work for me, so even if I do watch it, it doesn't really help me with their cases. So it's just
that's a total fair complaint. You know, I totally understand that completely. You know,
right? And it's funny because I was just listening to Brian and Vinny's show, and finally hear Alvarez essentially trying to make the same exact point that I've been making for years on this show, talking about that they cut out the heat, which is like the most important part of most matches. Yeah, so it's just, to me, it's just really hard to get into a WWE match without the heat in most of them. I have no WWE guys on the list. No one who only worked in WWE this year. I had maybe one or two NXT people, still not even a lot. And then, of course, we do the tag teams can count as a unit if they're like a 100% tag team. And
right.
So I had like Sandwich Squad on my list and, you know, those guys as a singles, both of them as a singles, it'd be tough to make space for both of them, you know. But as a tag team, I thought they were one of the best tag teams around.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm looking forward to really diving in, and then I'm sure we'll talk about it here on the show. You hit on something interesting, I thought, about mentioning Eric Royal's heel work and X. We're talking PWX, not PWX, but X. What are we watching?
WXW. Jesus.
WXW, yeah. Again, I mean, look, I can't even tell me to do my ABCs sometimes. And we talk about the heel work. And I thought it was a really interesting talking point. I saw a John Cena interview when he was doing press for his new movie that's coming out. And when the guy interviewing him obviously was a wrestling fan. And Cena was talking about how nowadays there's really no heels and baby faces. And, you know, I think that's just a byproduct of what the WWF does, maybe in the big leagues. But with that said, it does seem like, when we've talked about this too on the indies, it does seem like there's a lot of guys on the indies afraid to work heel because of affecting their income and stuff. But do you believe that theory that there's no good guys and bad guys now in wrestling? It's just shades of gray. I mean, I think that's crap, and I think it's a lot more, you can get a lot more invested in a match when there's a straight heel and a straight face.
Yeah, I think it's bullshit. I think that the some of the best, most exciting, interesting stories out there are, there's heels, there's people who can switch back and forth at the drop of a hat. One of the guys we'll talk about today, Walter, I think you could say, I wouldn't be shocked if you had this match that we're going to talk about, the tag team match, if you had some of his matches with David Starr, any of his other tag team matches with Thatcher, and then also the match with Ilya Dragunov. You could have all those matches in your top 10 matches of the year, I think, and he switches from heel to babyface with very minute character changes, but he's still very clearly a heel and a babyface. I mean, when he's a heel, he's a heel. And there's no way, I don't think that there's any way you could try to say that in the match with Ilya in 16 Karat Final that he's anything but 100% heel. You know what I mean?
Ilya was a total blowjob babyface in that match, and Walter was the monster. I mean, he was Vader to Ilya's Sting in a way, you know?
Yeah, and so to say there's no heels and no babyface, I just think that yes, WWE, they're just really not allowed to. We talked about it before, too, when I kind of mentioned that hearing Chris Hero talk about that they don't really call it a heat segment anymore,
That fascinating, that talking point. When he brought that up on Parvin Allen's podcast, when he referred to it, like both of them are referred to as the either he said they're both called heat or both called shine, whatever.
They call it the heat no matter what, essentially.
Yeah, that's just nuts.
And I think that affects a lot of there are a lot of studies, and this is not like this is not the podcast where I get into all my intellectual bullshit, but there's studies out there that show that language and the way that you use language frames your reality and your understanding of the world. So, I mean, the terms that you use, even in a wrestling parlance like that, are going to affect the way that you work and the way that you kind of go about things. So if you're a babyface and you're talking about, I'm going to work this heat segment, it's going to affect how that's going to come across as a babyface. You know, it's going to unfortunately come across more like a heat instead of a shine or whatever, whichever the confusion was between it. But I just think that, that was like ridiculous. But I think it does go into WWE psychology that it's just, they don't want it to be. And it's weird because you talk about not wanting to lose their money, but you think on the indies, it's all about selling gimmicks and the fans have to be able to come up to you and you don't want them to like you, so they'll buy your shirts because you don't make that much money. But it's really coming from the top down. I mean, the WWE guys seem to be the ones who don't want to be heels, and it's kind of informed the rest of the.
And I don't know if it's the WWE guys. I think it's just shitty booking on the WWE's part, where everybody, they don't know how to get a babyface over anymore. It seems like, I mean, it's pretty cut and dry how you get a babyface over. You let them win, and you let them get beat up, and you gotta let them get revenge. You let them be able to make comebacks. You don't make them look like a fucking goof. That's why a lot of their heels become baby faces. I mean, that's why Hunter's a baby face, essentially, even though he's a heel, because he always wins, or he wins with the pedigree. I mean, even as a heel, he'd always win with the damn pedigree. That goes back for years on how they booked their people, and so now. I think that's where a lot of that lies in, because the booking's so bad. Everyone's got to be a heel or a babyface. Everyone's got to be shades of gray because the booking's all shades of gray because they don't know how to book face versus heel.
Yeah, and a lot of the indies, I mean, they don't know where they're going. They don't know, they don't have people long term because so many places are trying to just do the PWG kind of supermatch model instead of using locals and having guys that are going to, you're going to have there long term. I mean, one of the biggest things in the 2010s was the progress story of Jimmy Havoc. And I don't think that you can have what happened in that bubble happen if it wasn't for the fact that at that time, the UK scene wasn't just another super match kind of plate. Like, everyone wasn't just booking dream matches with everybody. So progress knew that they had Jimmy Havoc, and he was kind of teaching at their school, and he was a big part of the company, and so they were able to invest in that story long term. But like, I think everyone would agree that was a really, really great thing that happened, a great story, great everything. And it's kind of like,
throw in Will Ospreay before he became really, before become an asshole, or became really an unlikable babyface. He was a good babyface as a foil for Havoc in the extension of that story.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that while I think everyone would agree that they really enjoy that and appreciated it and liked it so much, so many wrestling fans now are kind of part of the problem that creates why we can't have stuff like that. They complain that the match wasn't that good. They shit on, Thatcher. I'm always going to go back to that. Shit on Thatcher because he didn't have this amazing work rate WrestleMania weekend because he was doing a show-long storylines, selling and all this. And it's kind of like, You can't really have both, and it's just...
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'd rather have, like, what Thatcher did, like, that, what was it, two manias ago?
Yeah.
It was like... versus Matt Riddle in the same building last year, where he had an injury during the Evolve matches, but when he was working Progress, he never sold anything. He never sold a neck injury. It just drove me freaking batty. Yeah, it's supposedly, I guess, a different company, but you're in the same freaking building.
You know it's the same fans. You know it's yeah. It's all part of the same weekend, More Than Mania ticket. Yeah, I know. It's just... But, I mean, there's so much to complain about in wrestling, and we're like... We talked off the air. I'll just say it. Like, we mentioned, like, should we even talk about Elgin at this point? And it's like, the stuff we're talking about is, like, obviously the most important stuff to us, but... It's like the tip of the iceberg when it comes to, like, problematic stuff in wrestling, trouble in wrestling.
Yeah, you know,
so.
That's the problem. I mean, I'll say about the indie wrestling, and you have people like a Michael Elgin in charge of a company. I mean, I work for a company, and you know what? When there's a problem we can't handle at the level at corporate level, it goes up the food chain to HR. And you know what? There's no governing body, really. Governing the indies, where they have a human resource manager to handle these type of situations. And I mean, I think that's part of the problem is the regulation of wrestling, not just, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of scummy people in this business, but the fact that we don't have regulation in a way, and I know it's more costly, and I have no idea how you would do it. I mean, I remember back in the 80s, they'd have the State Athletic Commission be a lot more involved. But now, there's so many indie shows running, I can't imagine the State Athletic Commission is involved with wrestling, especially when they push it as entertainment. I mean, it all boils down to not having the proper people or not even having these type of positions available to have people make complaints and to get solutions and stuff, and for Michael Elgin to be a dummy and not only, I mean, whatever choice he made I mean, I don't want to get into the inner facts of all that, because I really don't know the whole, you know, I don't know if anyone really knows the whole story behind it, but I don't think just blame Michael Elgin and that ilk. I blame the way the whole entire system. I think the system should be looked at and not just particular people.
Well, yeah, and it's difficult too, because I mean, I just had this cross my mind the other day as I was looking through, you know, different shows that are going on all around, and I noticed that, you know, at some point in December there's a show running in San Diego, and it's like around the same area of that show that I went to that was canceled last minute or didn't end up running and all this. And it's like, in my mind, I'm like, how do I know it's not the same people? It's the same person. And that's another problem with wrestling, is so much of this stuff is kept kind of kayfabe secret. They don't just flat out say what's going on. So, I mean, guys can be shady and then disappear and then just show back up with a different name.
Yeah, a guy can be shady, but he's friends with somebody and they lend him his license and then he's promoting on his license. Yeah, I mean, there's so much crap.
Yeah, so there's so much weirdness. And then there's cool people out there, like the guy who runs Q Pro, and I don't know if he's ever going to run another show, but, like, he pretty unabashedly says, like, you know, I don't really make money off of wrestling. I put together cool matches that I want to see. And he just kind of does that, and that's super fucking cool. And never, you know, from what I can tell, never does anything weird. But for, you know, every guy like that, there's plenty of other fucking creeps and jerks and people who just run... And, you're right. I mean, the problem is there's no way to protect anyone. It sucks because regulations are getting, you know, obviously this is not a political podcast, but regulations are getting less and less. They're talking about essentially defanging the whatever it is for the national handicapped people protections, not the ACA, but whatever it is. They're like essentially going to make it so that for any kind of persons of disabilities not having access to things, they have to be actually turned away from some kind of service before they can then have to sue themselves without any regulation arm of the government actually going after it. And it's like, God, imagine that with pro wrestling. I mean, if they try to enforce any kind of rules in pro wrestling, but like it has to be that, you know, a wrestler or a fan has to actually see something happen, know that it happened, then report it. And then that's the only way it's going to get cleaned up, rather than having any kind of commission going out of their way to look for this stuff. It's just, the stuff's never going to get changed. The stuff's never going to get fixed, you know, because that's just never going to happen. There's too many steps to that. And what wrestler is really going to say anything? Like, in the Mike Elgin case, whatever happened there, you can argue that he was the boss of Glory Pro, but it goes both ways. He's the boss of Glory Pro, but he's also a wrestler at AAW and New Japan and all these other places. So he can't really, even if he should have done something, which you can argue whatever you want, he has to turn around and think, like, well, I do this, how does it affect me down the line? You know, how does that, maybe someone sees me do this and then they don't want to book me because they think I'm a troublemaker, you know? And then because I'm, even if he's doing something good and everyone can agree that it was something good, some people will legitimately think, like, I just don't want to bring someone with that kind of drama into my company, and then you lose bookings at other companies. So while this hurt him and he did lose bookings because of this, you could almost see that he could have possibly lost bookings the other way. So while I'm not defending him, because you should just take a stand based on what you think is morally correct, I can also see kind of questioning the what could happen to you? What kind of weird retaliation might happen to you? Can you lose that when you're trying to take care of a family? So it really sucks that there isn't, like you said, some kind of governing body, some kind of higher up food chain that's actually trying to make this stuff better.
Exactly. I mean, I don't want to harp on it too much, but again, it just seems like the system's broke. I mean, it just so happens that just Michael Elgin, it could be is just in the spotlight this last month over it. It easily could be promoter Joe Blow or whoever and stuff. Because again, there's not a structure in the system to be able to deal with this type of stuff, where it becomes like you're policing. I mean, you're essentially policing yourself. And I find that hard. That's why we're in a police state, and that's why we have policemen, because we're not good enough to police ourselves and stuff, you know. And I don't think wrestling's above not being able to police themselves. Of all the companies, of all the businesses out there, I would not say, and I love wrestling, but it would be not. I mean, anything with any wrestling, pro football, they should never be able to police themselves. And we just have this, the structure is what is, I think, truly at fault. And it also has a lot of scummy human beings in there, and I'm sure there's a lot of great human beings in the wrestling business. But if you come with a system that is essentially broken with no one really keeping an eye on it, and then you have, usually when you have those scummy people, man, it's not a good mixture, you know?
Right. And the Elgin thing, you talk about, it could have been promoter Joe Blow. And here's the thing. If it was promoter Joe Blow out of whatever city that you never heard of, this story doesn't even make the light of day. No one even hears about it. And that's kind of the sad part, is the same thing could have happened with a dozen other promoters and no one would have heard about it or cared. But because it's Michael Elgin, now it's a big deal and people actually hear about it, which is kind of a good thing, but it's also kind of just sad to think about.
Yeah, one thing, though, I bet you that tour must have got pretty awkward with him and Cobb as tag partners, huh?
Yeah, I mean, Cobb seems like a cool guy, but it's pretty tough when you find out someone's, you know, talking about you that way in the DMs, no matter how much they try to protect themselves and act like it wasn't an off-the-cuff conversation. It was, you know, it was just whatever. But,
yeah, Elgin was just getting buried all month, Jesus. And I wouldn't be surprised if Cobb takes his spot in New Japan.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, you know, when he tries to say Cobb isn't doing well, I saw the opposite. To me, it looked like Cobb was getting over pretty goddamn well.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's into him, and he keeps his mouth shut.
Yeah, and I mean, I hate to say it, Elgin's kind of run the gauntlet already, you know, done that role of what he was doing, and it almost feels like it needs for a change now. And now it's time to bring in a guy who actually has a real background, which Japan usually loves and stuff. But we'll see how that transpires. Upside is, I did get my money back from Wrestle Circus. Okay, I didn't have to go through my bank. Like 3 days later, I got an email saying my refund was happening, and then 4 days later, it finally went through.
Well, that's good. I mean, yeah, good on them for paying you back.
So there we go. So they're all good. They're square in my book. Oh gosh, did you watch the Jericho Omega angle?
I have not actually seen that yet. I've heard all about it, but
well, watch it and then we'll talk about it next week.
All right.
And because I'm sure we'll cover the dome. But hey, why don't we get into some CWF? Unless you have anything else you want, any bullet points you want to hit on?
No, I'm ready to get into CWF.
Okay, and so you guys all know when we do these bullet points, these are just off the cuff. We don't really write. I mean, we have notes on the matches and stuff, and we know what shows we're watching. But usually at the front end of the show, it's just bullshit. We just flow off the fly. It comes off the top of my head, and Tim's got a pretty extemporaneous talk about it. So there we go.
Unfortunately, sometimes.
Yeah. But hey, man, let's go to CWF country, and the Road to Battlecade is coming, and we have two episodes, which is pretty much in the same building. So I think taking that hiatus is kind of cool in a way. But the first episode was pop-up video style, and man, before I ask you for your opinion, I'm gonna throw mine out there. I got it, but man, I thought it was really distracting at first. Then I got used to it, but I felt it was fine if the matches were really shitty, but I really thought all three matches were entertaining enough where I thought pop-up video actually hurt. Maybe you could do the pop-up video on, I don't know. I think it's a cool concept, and I actually like the concept. I just think you need to find those, plan it for a show you know is a stinkeroo. Because, I mean, I know CWF doesn't throw too many stinkeroos, but maybe find one that just, I don't know, because they don't throw that. I can't think of a show that I go, man, this show just absolutely is horrible this week. I haven't got any of that from CWF. It feels like a gimmick that would work better on a bad wrestling show as opposed to a good wrestling show. What were your feelings on pop-up video?
Very similar. This is a really cool gimmick that I liked. CWF is probably the only company that would think of doing it, but in some ways they're the worst company to do it because they've got like one of the best commentary teams in wrestling. So having no commentary and pop-up video really kind of is a downgrade from what they usually put out. So unfortunately, I think that's it. I think there was a mix. It seemed like some of this stuff was older, like this was older footage.
Yes, it was Adler's return.
Yeah, Adler's return. Eric Andrew with the goatee still. So, yeah. I mean, very obviously this was like older footage that maybe they had to scrape together to make an episode. So, you know, the pop-up video gimmick was a good way to get past that because the commentary possibly, if there even was commentary on this, would have been out of date. So you get rid of it and replace it this way. That kind of makes sense. But like I think we both agree, the issue with it is just that it's a step down from what you normally get from CWF, which is really awesome commentary.
There would have been commentary because the CL and then Stutzy commentated the next week.
Right, which I don't know, was that stuff all taped at the same time? I assume I thought it was the same building,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it's the same building, but I'm not sure. I would assume.
Oh yeah, maybe it wasn't. Could Trevor work twice?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this was older footage from the same building. They threw it together. They took off the commentary. They add the pop up. That all makes complete sense. But yeah, I just think that you know you lose a lot of CWF when you don't have the commentary.
Yeah, exactly. Especially because it's so storyline driven too, and the action's usually pretty good. Speaking of action, we got Adler versus Mace Lee. What do you think of this, man?
Pretty good stuff. Quick match. The pop-up gimmick is cool. But again, I think we already talked about that. But yeah, I think just quick pace match. Good return for Adler. Looks good against Mace Lee. Not really much to it, but a hot opener. Interesting having Trevor come out and kind of cheer on Adler, but also kind of steal his spotlight so quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think hot opener. Good return match for Adler, but I could see why they didn't play this as his actual return because the surprise return I thought was a lot better.
Yeah, it felt like Trevor was crashing Brad Attitude's wedding and taking the spotlight from the bride and the groom. And And here, I enjoyed the match too. That was a good bout, good athletic bout between two guys who I'm sure will end up working each other a lot. Trevor Lee's promo was fine, but again, I agreed with you. Kind of took the shine from Adler. And then we get Andrews and Valiant come out and attack. Converse makes the save. But I like this whole entire segment. Did you like the whole segment?
Yeah, I love the segment. I couldn't tell for sure if it's a match or not, but it's definitely a fun segment. Lots of brawling around the building.
Oh yeah, I mean, I felt like it definitely became a match. I was just talking about the setup. I liked how it was set up. I like how sometimes you run like a little angle. It just so it gives the match a little juice going into it, because this was a cold match. You know, none of these guys are feuding with one another. So I felt it was a good way to add some juice to the match.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a good thing that CWF has, which is enough history between everyone that it only takes something little like this to kind of pop off, and you can have a somewhat wild brawl style match that makes sense.
Yeah, and you know, and I thought this was a great Lee Valiant showing. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure halfway through the match you saw the damn welts all over his back, but I love Valiant. He's bumping, taking bumps off the wall, pinballing big time. Trevor Lee dumping Valiant in the trash can. Freaking fantastic. I thought this was a fun brawl to start. Then it morphs into a Southern tag. And that's where I think all four of these guys really shine, is in the Southern. I mean, that was a bullshit statement, because, I mean, Trevor Lee shines in 30-minute singles matches with detailed stories. So what the fuck am I saying? But they do a great – they all four can work a really strong Southern tag, and that's what they do here. I enjoyed the hell out of this. I give it 3.25 stars. Loved the brawling. I loved how it morphed into the Southern tag. I thought Lee and Converse were really good as a team, and Valiant and Adler, Valiant and Andrews, which we haven't seen since Andrews is running for whatever office. I kind of missed that pairing because they were just absolutely fantastic here. What were your thoughts, man?
Yeah, I'm with you. Three and a quarter sounds about right. They definitely lots of good action. The brawling is believable. The Southern tag that it goes into is fantastic. Heat from Lee and Everett is, you know, always phenomenal Converse and Trevor are just a really good tag team. They have a lot of history with each other, so they definitely can really fall back into that almost instantly and have it just completely make sense. So yeah, good stuff. We've talked about like the commentary not being there, all this and that. This felt like comparatively, this is like house show kind of stuff. And I don't know if that's what happened, but it does feel like CWF on tour, and it's like just bringing the hits in a way that's super satisfying to the crowd, and then can easily kind of fill the spot on the TV. So, I mean, yeah, you get into it pretty instantly.
Yeah, I love watching them in a sportatorium, but I really do. I get excited to see them get out and about, because it just gives them a different look and different feel, and change is good, you know. Change is good. Then we get Chet Sterling versus Nick Iggy in a singles match. Everyone talks about how great the Carnies are as an act, and then you know, the best unsigned team, tag team in wrestling. But I just want to say Nick Iggy was one hell of a heel here. What were your thoughts on the match and then Nick Iggy
I was really impressed with Nick Iggy. You're right. I've kind of been Kerry Offal is the better guy on the team person, really solidly behind Kerry Offal for a while, but Nick Iggy looked really good here. He keeps up with Chet. He's totally dickish, taking cutoff and cheat spots here and there. Great heat, really aggressive, like I said, athletic, able to keep up completely with Chet, who's like a... I'd say for CWF, Chet is in the upper level of kind of action-packed, go-go-go type wrestlers, and I thought that Nick Iggy looked really good being able to stay with him the whole way through. So I was really impressed with Nick Iggy here, so I'm with you. I think maybe I kind of undersold him this whole time just because I'm such a big fan of Carrie Offal, I didn't really see how good Nikki was this whole time.
Yeah, I'm with you. I always thought Carrie Offal was the brains and the, you know, the psychology behind the wrestling. And you know, I thought Nick Iggy was absolutely tremendous here as a Southern heel, shit talker, made everything matter. Of course, he's getting the work Chet Sterling, who is just a tremendous Southern babyface. Really, when I think about it, I would easily put Chet Sterling probably as one of my top 5 or 10 fighting underneath babyfaces around right now. The key here was Nick Iggy's trash talking, and he carried it throughout the match. Great Southern heel, territorial heel. Loved the camel clutch fish hook combination by Nick Iggy. Sterling's comeback is good. Everything about this is a good action packed, story driven match. Strong, again, what we talked about earlier on the pre-show. Both guys were identified. Nick Iggy was the heel. Chet Sterling was the babyface. Both guys played their roles, and the match worked because of these guys being the roles they played. And I gave it a good 3-star match. Really good stuff. Never thought of Nick Iggy as a guy. And I honestly, I came out of this thinking, if he worked CWF once a month, I would like to see like a TV title run out of the guy. I thought he was that good in the role. I mean, this felt like a prototype TV title run type of a defense and stuff. Did you see the TV title type of comparisons with Nick Iggy here?
Yeah, I could definitely see where you're coming from there. I think upper mid-card type heel character is something like a role he could definitely play based off of this action here as a single. So yeah, I could definitely see that.
You know, I mean, I can even see, you know, they're able to get enough dates on the Carnies. They could do, you know, they could bring, you know, go with the trio of the Carney group. You know, you could have, you know, you go, of course, you know, you focus on the tag work, but you know, you could spring Carrie Offal into a match with Trevor Lee at one point, Nick Iggy getting a TV title run, or Nick Iggy getting a title shot against Trevor, seeing Carrie Offal work Chet Sterling. I mean, yeah, I love the Carnies as an act, don't get me wrong, but I can see him in mid-miss for some reason in CWF. I can see him, you know, kind of doing what the Shield does in the WWE, where, you know, they're a group, but they can also splinter off and do singles runs, and which is not how the Carnies are normally booked. But they'd have to get enough dates in the they'd have to work enough dates to make it matter, you know.
Yeah, they'd have to be able to make it work. The Carnies, it's weird to me. I try to follow the Carnies as much as I can. I have no idea where they work or how often they work, because it feels like they pop up here and there, but I don't see them.
They pop up all over the place. Yeah, you see them in PWX, you see them in CWF. See him in Scenic City. See him in Sup. See him in Beyond. You know, they're all over the place. You never know where they're gonna pop up next. Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment. You know, they're all over the Powerbomb grid. You know.
Yeah, and I think I just would like to see them in some places more regularly, I guess. It's just my issue, but unfortunately, I think tag teams take the back seat in general. And.
Well, because, yeah, it costs. You're paying two people.
Right. So we'll see. I mean, I could definitely still see Nick in a singles run here, and that might even be, like, kind of helpful for him to kind of restart or kind of get that regular run somewhere. It might actually help if he was running singles, as much as I'd like to see them together as much as possible.
Yeah, and I just like to maximize them. Just, like, you know, see him work a lot of tags, but splinter off and have some runs doing this, and this, because they're talented enough and good enough to pull it off, and they're good enough promos where, I mean, they'd have to be working in, like, one of those areas, like a CWF Mid-Atlantic or maybe an Anarchy, where, you know, where it's still episodic in nature.
Yeah, no, that would be very good for them to see them work. Maybe they need to pay attention to Anarchy, because I don't know if they've been there regularly or not.
Yeah, I don't think they have, but I'm not sure. I do not know. Honestly, don't know. I don't want to speculate and be wrong. On that note, man, I really enjoyed the show overall, even with the pop-up gimmick. What about you?
Yeah, I still liked it. I think of what would have been if this had had some Stutzy commentary on it. It might have been just a little bit better.
Yeah, totally agree. And that leads us into the next week of CWF. And that opens this up with a Trevor Lee versus White Mike match. And, you know, for what this was, I really like this. It's not a classic Trevor Lee title defense or anything like that. But I want to say I thought these guys had one of the greatest wrist lock spots ever. I thought it was awesome. And the whole entire match, what it was, is what I was enjoying out of it was watching what Mike reactions are to Trevor putting him in all these submission holds and the reactions. It was just one of those. It wasn't like your classic. It's almost like watching it for a whole entire different reason than you'd watch a normal Trevor Lee title defense. I thought this was super fun and was all based around because of all White Mike's reactions. But Trevor knew that's what he needed to do. He knew he wasn't going to be putting on this five-star classic. They put on a match that was very entertaining. That's the key word, super entertaining match. What were your thoughts here?
Yes, super fun. Really liked the White Mike getting some good offense here. He didn't look out of place. The beginning was joking around, but then as he comes in, he definitely doesn't look out of place in there with Trevor. Trevor selling for him is always phenomenal. Trevor, you know, one of the best sellers in wrestling right now. So, really helps to put over Mike there. And, I did like the finish with Mike kind of getting all fired up, and he's doing the trope of taking on the straps, and that pretty much just sets up Trevor putting him down with the crossface. I thought that was a fun ending for the match. So yeah, I thought it was good. It's not gonna, you know, make it to the top 10 of Trevor Lee title defenses, but it was a nice little intermission before you go into Battlecade, where you're gonna hopefully have one of the better defenses of his title run so far.
Yeah, exactly. And that leads us to the two fair interviews with a Mark James interview and a John Schuyler interview. What were your thoughts here on those interviews?
Interviews were good. James was, I mean, I hate to say it, but there's a reason probably why James is leaving wrestling here without much fanfare, unfortunately. His promo was fine, but it didn't leap off the page with a lot of character. So yeah, from there, I think that they had the match. I don't remember the other.
It was C.W. Anderson and Mark James.
Yeah. Okay. The match.
Oh,
yeah,
John Schuyler did an interview too.
Oh yes. The John Schuyler interview. John Schuyler's interview feels very WWE kind of. He hits his points. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it comes across a lot more polished.
Very polished, right?
Yeah. Very, I've got my talking points, I've got my keywords, I'm going to hit
my catchphrase.
Yeah, I'm going to have my zing on it. So yeah, that's not a bad thing, but it definitely stands out in CWF.
Yeah, you know, yeah, absolutely correct. And that leads us to CW Anderson versus Mark James. What were you thinking on this match?
Good heavy hitting brawl, kind of helps to add some credibility to Anderson in CWF because he doesn't have a lot of matches like this in CWF because he's not here full time. With someone he's obviously familiar with, so they're able to just beat the fuck out of each other, both pretty heavy-handed, or at least both come across very heavy-handed. There were some points in there where you could see that they're, like the Polish hammers, you could see CW was, he's on his back, or he's into bump and selling before he even, you know, his contact with the Polish hammers, but a lot of the offense looks really good, so it's in those moments where I go, oh, you know, like, all this time, I think even since ECW, I've thought of CW Anderson as, like, one of these stiff guys, and it's kind of a little bit of a jab that I kind of had with Parm when he did the pod blast about stiffest wrestlers, where I said, like, you can't really know if they're stiff because you're not in there with them. You just know the legend and how they look. CW Anderson, he's a guy that I always thought of as super stiff, but when I saw him doing that, I was like, huh, maybe he's lighter than I assume. He's just a good worker, you know? It was a good match in that regard. Love the Extreme Horseman coming out to distract the ref over and over again. Really helps to add some heat to Anderson, and I thought it was a good match to help get over Anderson as a ass kicking shitty heel who takes the low road to win sometimes.
Yeah, I totally agree with that statement, and I thought these are two beefy guys hitting each other, and it was good. And it was a good meat and potatoes match with, I thought Mark James selling it really put it over the match, so especially that arm. He sold the arm like death. I thought it was fantastic. And a lot of young wrestlers should take a look at this match and see we can get a lot out of doing not a whole lot, but just by making your strikes look credible, your punches look credible, and selling makes it go a long way. You can make a little thing go a lot longer way than certain things and stuff. And I thought it was a really good, credible pro wrestling match. again, I love the Battlecade Event Center. On paper, this Battlecade looks absolutely amazing. The show, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this card is phenomenal. It's like a dream card, but it's all guys from CWF, which is just, you know, there's not a lot of imports coming from outside and all this. It just goes to show how their booking and everything that they do really helps make all the matches just seem so much more important. And the event center is so cool.
I was going to try to go down for this show, but I it was a choice between, because I need to take time off from work. But my sister and her husband are bringing the kids down. So I decided to take time off around Christmas to spend time with them over Battlecade. Yes, I do choose family over wrestling. But my God, it was a tough decision. And that leads us into the main event, which was a fatal four-way with Eric Royal, John Skyler, Tracer X, and Chet Sterling. I thought this was all action. Royal's pounce was just nasty. I thought Chet working like kind of like a face in peril was just fantastic and was the glue here. I love Skyler and Royal's double teaming. Nice job of combining story and action. I got this like 3.5-star match. Thought it was a really fun way to headline a spot show, if you will. What were your thoughts?
I'm pretty much there with you. I thought I really liked Tracer X in here. I thought that he's looking a lot more polished now than from
more professional.
Yeah, comes across a lot more professional. He didn't stand out here. I'm really starting to like him a lot more, and I thought that he looked good with his stuff in the match. But then he's taken out, and it was kind of perfect to get him out of there so that you can then have the two heels double team Chet, because that's what the crowd really wants, is to have a chance to get behind the babyface Chet getting double teamed by these two big bad heels, because that's what Chet is so good at, is underdog selling as well. And then it was just fantastic to have that going. The two heels are kind of arguing here and there and having issues back and forth, but still trying to mess with Chet. And then finally, Chet's able to kind of put it together, get the big pins, get the big wins, kind of seemingly out of nowhere. But you were behind him the whole way, and you knew he could pull it out because he's just so fantastic and just this great, believable underdog babyface. It was like really fantastically done, and a perfect way to send the crowd home happy off of, yeah, what's kind of like a spot show type match or a spot show type show. And just really well done, honestly. Really smart. I think, like I said, I thought Tracer got a chance to shine. Skyler and Royal were fantastic playing, you know, these bully heels that were also like stupid enough to make up little mistakes and kind of not able to trust each other, so they keep having little accidents. And then Chet Sterling is the you talk about the glue. He's the star of the match. He's the most important guy in the match. He's the best guy in the match with the underdog selling, nice, quick, flurry comebacks, just great action and phenomenal stuff. Forgot to mention, from the moment he enters the screen, Eric Royal is just fucking with the crowd and being the big-time star who leaps off the page. I talk about that promo from James not leaping off the page. Eric Royal leaps off the page just the second he comes out of the curtain, so that's why he made my top 50 list, right? I mean, the guy is just so damn good. So, great really match. Is. Great kind of spot show. You talk about great spot show main event. Send the crowd home happy off of something that just makes your baby face look good and doesn't really hurt anybody. even the two heels losing, you got some miscommunication and some other issues, so it doesn't really hurt them coming out of it. They don't lose any shine coming out of this. Just good stuff all around.
Yep, another strong show, and we got another nice little setup leading to Battlecade, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. Continue to be very excited for Battlecade, very excited for Chet Sterling in Battlecade, the first blood match in Battlecade. I mean, there's going to be a lot of great action in Battlecade for sure.
Oh, yeah, Andrew Everett and Logan Easton LaRue. You know, I was wrong. Obviously, they're saving Snooty and Royal for the Chapel Hill milk run. But yeah, I mean, there's so much, and there's so much Civil War. We'll talk about it probably more next week about Battlecade. But on that note, why don't we take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk NXT.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place Team Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. And we're back. We're going to look at NXT. And this show is coming right off of the War Games, setting up pretty much going into the takeover in January, gearing up for that one in Philly. We get Cien Almas and Zelina Vega out. I thought this was a little weird. I don't know. It seemed like Almas was definitely pumped to be champ, but, I don't know. It just came across really weird. Like, he didn't know where his camera angles, where he should be, and was going all over the ring, trying to make it a manic, maybe. I don't know. It was a little off to me. What do you make of it?
I could see that. He was a little weird. I liked him gloating to the crowd. I think it's just tough because he's still trying to learn English and stuff, so it makes it even a little bit harder to kind of, I think, get the point across that he's trying to get across. That said, I mean, I don't think it was terrible, and I think that I liked the act. It was definitely a stumbling block, but we'll see next week. I think when he does his talking between the ropes, he's a lot better, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. And his charisma comes out, though.
Yeah, that's for sure.
What do you think of the Lars Sullivan interview?
I really liked that it had this kind of press conference feel to the interview. He got a little bunch of microphones, people trying to talk to him. I thought that was good to help him feel like a star. I kind of didn't like that they bring the same style back later on with Ember Moon in the same episode. Yeah. But I did like it as something different. I like his style. I like his delivery. And I felt like, yeah, doing the press conference style and the way that he commanded attention and the presence that he had helped to make him feel like a bigger star.
Yeah, exactly. And when you compare it to the Ember Moon one, where ends up being the Aussie Mean Girls take over the press conference, you know, one comes across as a star and the other also ran in their segment. Then we get Trent Seven versus Killian Dane. What were your thoughts here?
This is the perfect use of Trent Seven in NXT. I'm just getting demolished by Killian Dane here. Really felt like he couldn't even get started. I'm liking the signature special music now for Dane as well as Nikki Cross to make them both kind of stand out.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's a nice mix of the Sanity music, but it's a little bit better. I thought they did a good job of having Dane jumping from the bell, and then Seven really feels like he can't shake the cobwebs. Even when he's able to hit the Seven Stars Lariat, it's not enough, and then he's just kind of put down by the... Are they calling him the Beast from Belfast? Because that feels like that's the name for him. It puts him down with the Vader bomb. Looks good. Dane, probably the best Dane showing, or one of the better Dane showings. He's starting to, I think, figure it out here in NXT. More practice, more time with people essentially telling him to keep it basic, I think is going to do him well, and he's just going to keep getting better and better. Like I said, I thought good use of Seven here. Crowd's into him, but this is a good way to help build up Dane.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought it was a great showcase for Dane. And, you know, you look at Trent Seven, and now that Ellsworth is off the main roster, Trent Seven might be the most weirdest WWE guy on the roster right now. I mean, he doesn't have a great body. It looks like he has a third nipple. he's not a super worker by any stretch of the imagination. And it feels like he almost got the job because they needed enough Brits to fill the tournament in the UK tournament. And does he feel like a weird oddball mixed in NXT?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he does. He's got a charisma and he's got some promo skills, but in a way that doesn't fit in WWE's mold at all.
Yeah.
He's not one of the best workers that you're going to get. He's not in good shape. He doesn't. But I think it's a kind of a game recognized game situation where I think the Triple H has to be like, well, I can't hate on this guy because he essentially is rocking my steez. He buddied up with two guys that are just phenomenal and super over and big time acts. And, you know, as long as he rides their coattails, he'll be able to make a name for himself. And I think it's like, he impressively did this a very similar thing that Triple H did when he kind of joined up with the Click.
Yeah.
And now he's like, he got himself signed. He's got himself a job. And I mean, you know, some of his students, some of the Fight Club Pro students are doing pretty well for themselves. A lot of them are getting the real training from kind of Travis Banks, but he also, you know, Seven also trained some people that kind of have ended up doing okay. So maybe he's just got a good mind for the business, but he just doesn't have the look or the execution for it, you know?
And no offense, the name's the shits, too.
Yeah, I don't really like that name, Trent Seven.
I don't even know what the hell it means.
Yeah, I've never really got into it. He also, I mean, he started wrestling old. That's another thing, is I think people think that he's a longtime vet because of how old he is, but he's really not. He started wrestling. I mean, he has been wrestling for a while, but he started when he was pretty old already. So, you know, that's another thing that probably didn't help, is that that's why he never... Because some guys, it's like a lot of these lucha guys, you watch them, and because they learn how to, like, physically do something, they're able to do it for years and years, even when they're shit and out of shape. But he never learned how to do some of the stuff, so he just can't do it still.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Yeah. I just always thought he was a weirdo. A weird NXT type guy.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard he's also a weirdo, but, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Well, you know, third nipple.
Yeah,
right. And then we get an Undisputed interview. You know, now if you look at this interview and you can compare them when they're working, you know, when you put it all together between the work and the interview, isn't Bobby Fish come across like the most polished between the three?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Bobby Fish, I've said it for a long time. I mean, Bobby Fish is like the best one out of these guys. He was one of the best guys in ROH when it came to between the ropes, promo, everything. So, yeah, no. I mean, clearly, he's got this unfortunate thing where he's kind of older. And for some reason, he just doesn't get the respect he deserves for how good he is.
Yeah, now, this is a weird thing. It's like, it's sad to see him as the third wheel here, because he's, I thought, was the best promo. I think he's the second best worker between the three of them. Right. And I think he has the best look between the three of them. It's a weird, weird situation here. I don't know. Cole just doesn't, hasn't been lighting the fire for me in here in NXT, even though, I mean, they've been putting him in key positions. And O'Reilly, I think, has looked good and done well in what he's had to do. But I think Cole's been definitely the weak link here. And he's supposed to be a great promo. And I've seen him cut really good promos. But I thought Bobby Fish was better on the stick here. So he better get his A game going, because I think NXT's counting on him to be a top guy. I just don't see it right now. What are your thoughts here on all this?
I feel like Cole just has had this thing where he's been talked about like he's the second coming, you know what I mean, for years and years, and oh, it's just going to happen. And I feel like he never really developed into that guy that everyone thought he was going to.
Yeah.
But people just continue to treat him like he is, like he just is, for some reason, because he had the potential to be like the next Shawn Michaels, the way people talked about him. Like, somehow you just treat him as if he became that when he never did. He's never really taken that next step. He's had some good matches. He's had some good promos. His best promos are all like kind of pre-production video type stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of over the top. So you kind of doubt how good he is live. I mean, he was good in PWG. He's a really good like postmodern wrestler, you know, and now he can't be on the DKP Christmas thing, which was like another part of like what always made him cool, is he's like one of those guys. And like, you know, he kind of has flirting with the Smart Mark community on the Wrestling Observer by being on their like third brand podcast every year for Christmas and stuff, you know. And now Alan has started some new kind of tradition, because he's not going to have Adam Cole anymore. But yeah, it's kind of like he's got a lot of stuff there. A lot of people really like him. But to me, I don't see it. He doesn't quite have it. This video package to me felt too much like they're trying to redo the NWO.
Yeah,
I don't know if with the music playing and the way that the camera was cutting around as they're talking, it felt very NWO to me.
Yeah, they're definitely trying to play cool heel.
Yeah, and so I'm just kind of like, I don't know if I'm buying into it. I really think that they should have tried to do something a little bit more original, rather than kind of, like I said, coming across like a little NWO takeoff thing. Especially because I don't think that the NWO takeoff really suits them. You know, they're kind of a different thing, especially, I mean, I guess, unfortunately, Cole is supposed to be the star of the act or whatever, but the other two guys kind of have this MMA thing. So it's like the group almost would make sense if they leaned into the MMA shooter thing. But if you do that, it hurts Cole, because he's not an MMA shooter, you know? So it's a tough situation that they're in. That said, I mean, we'll see where they go. Adam Cole.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at it, I mean, they're feuding. They've been feuding with like Roddy Strong, who's not a, you wouldn't think NXT when you think of Roddy Strong as a NXT original. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, so having him play an NWA invading group on kind of like on the NXT brand, where most of the NXT guys are former indie stars. It doesn't resonate.
Yeah, no, they need to figure something out, but I don't even know if I know what it is, honestly.
Yeah. Then we leads into a Ruby Riott versus Sonya Deville match, no holds bar match. You know, these girls are going are up on the main roster now, so it almost feels anticlimactic here, but we'll talk about it. What were your thoughts?
I didn't know this was no DQ until the finish. That said, I am kind of like, what the fuck? Like, where was this Sonya Deville the entire time in NXT?
Right.
She looked good and dominant to start out. She seemed sure of herself. She didn't come across like she's fucking just doesn't know what she's doing and can't like hold her own in there. It was ridiculous. Riott has great offense, nice dives. Loved the counter of the ankle lock climbing up the ropes. Big dive from Riott was really cool. The finish is awesome with Deville getting the triangle choke in the ropes, which if I had known it was DQ the whole time, I may have gotten a little bit more into it. But The finish was perfect because Deville gets the win with the submission hold, but Ruby Riott doesn't actually tap out. And if it wasn't a no DQ match, it would have been broken up because she's in the ropes. So it even plays off of that completely, that you got a total out to protect Ruby Riott, but Deville gets the win to look strong going forward. So really a smart finish for the match, especially with both of them going up to the main roster now. They're not really going to cross paths again for a while. So this is something, this is an issue that can easily be brought back up later. You would hope that they do kind of reference it at some point in WWE if they ever get to each other, but they probably won't because it's NXT, so it doesn't matter. But for me, I'll always remember it as like a nice little sticking point in the feud between these two if they ever come back to it.
My old problem was the build to this. Like, they mentioned that Sonya Deville is Ruby Riott's all-time biggest arch enemy. Well, I always felt that it was Nikki Cross. Do you feel Nikki Cross, or do you feel it's Sonya Deville is
to
Ruby
me, it's
Riott?
Nikki Cross. I mean, and I think it seemed like it was done that way intentionally. I mean,
So I don't know why they want to rewrite history here. No need to do that. And I felt they built a feud to this that on paper it didn't click, where they never escalated that we needed a no holds barred match. So it felt kind of just thrown out there. Maybe it was. Obviously, both girls are going up to the main roster. I just felt the whole entire build to this match made zero sense to me.
Yeah, and I can definitely see that.
So watching it, I thought it was an okay match, but I was just for this to really work and click for me, I think the build needed to be a hell of a lot better. Really disappointing. Then we get that Ember Moon interview, which we kind of talk about. Mean Girls take over, and, you know, Ember's kind of made to look like a stupid baby face in a way. But they kind of tease a little bit of a breakup between the Mean Girls, but it's squashed real quick. But I think that's a nice little foreshadowing, maybe. But it felt like the Aussie Mean Girls would have been good to go up. If they're going to go up with two different groups of girls, and they're being in a trio group, it feels like the Aussie Mean Girls have been a natural act for the main roster if they're doing a threesome, you know?
Yeah, no, I know. You just add one person in, and you kind of got a trio to work. But again, I think my pet theory, my pet fantasy booking.
Yeah, and that was a good one.
I think it plays into the idea that the iconic group, I think, is going to be more protected. I don't think they want to just have them go up to be part of something like that. I think them as just a duo together is actually going to be important on the main roster, but who knows?
Okay, that's interesting. Then we get a Dunn and Bate video package. I mean, I've said this before. I love video packages when you're about to debut and you want to build something. But a hype video that we've seen and a match that we've already seen a couple times, I don't think we really need a hype video at this point. It feels more like time filler, and that's what I feel it is. What were your thoughts on this?
Especially for these two. I mean, fuck, man. Because they were in the UK Classic where they kept getting the same videos shown over and over again. You know what I mean? Because they kept showing those same UK tournament videos repeatedly for weeks and months. So now, then doing more and more of this just video hype, like hyping up this epic encounter between the two, which is another one. It just become like, I've talked really big about that match. A lot of people have talked really big about that match. But then when you start putting together a hype video that's almost trying to play off of that with a wink and a nod about just how big and important this matchup is, it starts to lose its luster. You can't really have the company present something as an all-time epic classic encounter, you know, that way, and not have it then start to kind of lose a little bit of that actual shine.
Agreed. Totally agree with you there. What do you think of the main event of Cassius Ohno versus Johnny Gargano?
The crowd is completely fired up before the match even starts. They're way into it, which is great. Gargano is obviously, like, become a really smart wrestler. This match.
Now, before we go on to the match, that's something I want to hit on. He's a guy I used to hate, and it felt right when he went into NXT. It felt like finally everything clicked. Do you think it was just coaching and guys correcting some of the mistakes, and him just like, well, I better listen to him if I want to stay around? and he finally realized what they were talking about, and he finally was able to put it all together, the selling and the and then being able to use his spots that are over. But the key was selling and being able to fight from underneath instead of, because Johnny Wrestling to me used to always like would always go toe to toe with guys that are bigger than him, and it made zero sense whatsoever. And you just shit can arm work or leg work, but now, man, he's one of the best at it. And I honestly think he's like honestly the poster child of taking a guy on the indies who had potential and really, you know, maybe turning the guy into almost like the complete package besides his promos, which aren't bad, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, he's... Okay, so I haven't done a complete, like, 360 or 180 or whatever, whichever one actually makes sense on him, in that I think some of his issues are still there. He doesn't show a lot of emotion. He sells well, but I feel like he doesn't show great fire and passion. He's better than he used to be. That's for damn sure. He is also, like you said, he's a lot smarter now about putting together matches that make sense. I think part of it, too, is that on the indies, he had to kind of protect his aura. I think Gabe, and I don't know, but from what I heard, Gabe was a little bit particular about the way that he was allowed to be booked in companies outside of the WWN network because he was their top guy and their ace and their champion and all that. So I think that he was supposed to be protected, like he was on the same level as everyone, which I think, I agree with you, definitely hurt his appeal because he came across like he kind of wrestled a video game style where stuff didn't make sense. It didn't like fit in the structure of what was going on because he needed to be able to be seen as on the same level as the top guys in the indies when he was a smaller guy. You know, so I can definitely see that. In this match, genius work from the opening minutes. Gargano's bumping huge, making the most out of Cassius Ohno's size, which is really, really important for this matchup. Because me, watching it, not knowing who's going to win, I'm like, well, if Gargano loses, he made the most out of Ohno's size, so it makes sense that he loses because this guy's fucking huge. If he wins, it's even bigger because he overcame a gargantuan... feet and this gigantic wrestler who's able to just throw him around with ease. So it's like it's so smart. It, like you said, it's makes sense. There's not this like cognitive dissonance where I have to pretend like this tiny guy is able to match size for size with Ohno because he just can't, right? So that definitely helped a lot. But yeah, I think that he needed some coaching. He needed some focus. I think he's spending a lot more time selling. The tag team with Ciampa, I think, helped really open him up and have a lot more personality. I think Ciampa is like kind of been criminally underappreciated wrestler for this entire decade. Just for how good I think he is all in all. I was having a conversation recently with people about like Michael Elgin's best opponents, and you know, he got that 5-star with Davey Richards for having just this insane spot fest match. But I'm like, to my mind, I think the person who always got some of the best matches out of Elgin was Ciampa.
I agree. Ciampa, I thought they had great, got a great feud in Ring of Honor.
Yeah, and then the matches in PWG, they had another match in either PWX or XWA. But yeah, I always felt like Ciampa was a guy who could have great matches with Elgin, he could have great matches with Gargano, he could have great matches with pretty much anybody, no matter what their size, he could wrestle different stuff. So I really think tagging with Ciampa helped him learn a lot more about how to work in a way that made sense for different settings. And he just, yeah, I think he's grown a lot. Some of the stuff that I hear Dylan say about him now compared to what he thought of him before, I think are a bit over the top. But I think that he has definitely improved quite a bit. But like I said, I think some of the issues for me are still there.
I'm in the Dylan camp where I've done a whole entire. I mean, I used to think he was like honestly one of the dirt worst, most overrated wrestlers on the planet, and now I am excited every time he steps in the ring. So where I'm expecting something really good, and I think he's been the backbone of NXT this whole entire year, and I'm really a guy you could, I think, could be one of the most underrated wrestlers on the planet right now.
Okay, yeah. Like I said, I just don't get the passion there, and that's my only issue with him. We'll see. I mean, this run to the championship, which Vic
I think he's shown a lot more fire now from fighting underneath, and I think he's improved a lot. He still has, he can definitely get it a little better, but yeah, I think he's shown a lot more of fire and stuff. And this match I thought was awesome.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, what?
No, I was going to say, and on the other side of this matchup, this is the best that Ono's looked in NXT, hands down.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
This is close to 2016, greatest of all time, Chris Hero level match. I mean, the countering of the slingshot spear, the big shots sending Gargano to the floor over and over again, staying on top, picking his spots, huge attacks. I mean, Ono looked great. Gargano looked great. The La Mystica style setup into the Gargano escape I thought was a great, amazing, kind of lucky underdog finish to get Gargano the win. I thought that this was fantastic. It's a great way to rehab Gargano after a loss and after kind of losing streak to then now tell this story of building him up for what, I mean, could be a really phenomenal singles title match against Almas. These guys have already had a good match before. I think that for the title, again, after building Gargano back up, I think that they could have an even better match. So I think, honestly, based on this four-way and where they're going, that's where they need to go. But we'll see. We'll see what the plan is.
Yeah, I think it is Gargano, but I'm with you. I thought this match was with aces. Gave it 4.25 stars. Thought Gargano was great selling Ono's offense, and Gargano was great. I thought he showed really good fire here. Ono's strikes were just on point and nasty. That Tope DBT by Gargano was nuts. And I thought the timing on the Cyclone kick by Cassius Ono was, like, incredible. Like, amazing how the timing on that thing was. Looked like he kicked Gargano's head off. Just great, great match. And I was like, yeah, best of both worlds, where they meshed both their styles and had this epic match. Oh, my gosh. I thought we had a really strong week of NXT here, especially ending on that note of that match, which was just totally awesome. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Great week. Great. A lot of stuff. Like, I think my only hiccup is with you talking about the no DQ match between Riott and DeVille, being that, like, there wasn't enough build. I think I kind of overlooked that because I didn't know it was a no DQ match until the finish. So,
yeah,
like, I didn't think, like, oh, this should have had more of a build to make sense as a no DQ match. And then another minor detail is having the two press conference style interviews that just, like, kind of one ruined the specialness of the first one, especially because the second one didn't really come across as good. So you're better off just sticking with just doing the one with Sullivan. That's, like, my only gripes with the whole thing. Otherwise, the episode was really, really good.
Yeah, I'm with you on even on the gripes. And that leads us to the next week of NXT. And this was on the USA Network also. I watched mine on the WWE Network. What about you?
Yeah, theoretically, same. I did not watch it on USA.
Okay. And I guess USA cut off the Ember Moon Peyton Royce match to make time.
Oh,
so
I did not see that match, actually. Sorry. So I guess I watched the USA version.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we open up with Cien Almas versus Fabian Archer, and this was just felt like an old studio Ric Flair Sam Houston, where he gives Sam Houston the first 2 or 3 minutes, lets him put on, he does all his big moves. That dive by Aichner to the floor was freaking nuts. But, you know, all it did was Almas, sold. Selena Vega gets involved. One big move by Almas goes to his finish, and he gets the win. Just, you know, just total old school studio squash match where, you just pretend you're going to lose, but then the banana peel happens and you get the victory. Good stuff. What about you?
Yeah, and I think that this shows just where Almas is a champion, where his bread will be buttered, being a very beatable champion. a guy who comes across like he could lose at any time. But then, you know, even after Eichner looks great with all this fantastic offense, he shows up with his, you know, his manager willing to cheat or get involved and help him, takes a cheap shot with the stairs, and boom, gets the win pretty much instantly after that. So I think this is perfect. I think a lot of people were kind of questioning, people going into the match, there's no way Almas wins the title. This is a throwaway defense because of War Games. And then he gets the win, and people are questioning, what do you do with him? You can't go into Black so quick. Maybe Black could win the title. People thinking Adam Cole's the next champion because they seem to be high on him. And to my mind, I'm like fully invested in a long-term Almas championship run. I think you can get a couple defenses. Obviously, you can break Aleister Black's undefeated streak with a bullshit finish with this guy in a title match, so that's almost perfect to then set up. You can go to a couple more, maybe one or two defenses, and then you have, you know, probably someone like Black finally get the title off of him, you know, after having lost to him maybe once or twice in shitty ways before. You know what I mean? And it's just, it's old school heat building. And
yeah,
I think
but it almost feels like they need to get a strong win over him. Because I feel they might have just butchered his character, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. Strong is an interesting one, because I just don't know where he is on the hierarchy of importance. So,
yeah.
To me, I think Almas as a long-term champion actually could work. And so,
I totally agree there. It feels low with who were we just talking about?
With Strong.
Right, yeah, so? Yeah, it feels like Strong, they've missed the boat, and they've kind of underestimated how over he could get.
Yeah, no, I definitely see that. We'll have to see where they go with him.
You know, they might take a year to rehab him like they did with Cena Almas, for all we know, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Or he could end
then
up
we
on
get the Aleister.
What's up?
Yeah, then we, what?
Oh, go ahead.
Then we get the Aleister Black vignette. Seen it, done it. Do we need another one? Do we need another one?
No, probably not. No.
And you like Black a hell of a lot more than I do.
Yeah, I don't need this. There's too much of this. Especially this is, I guess I watched the USA version, so they edited out a bunch for commercials, and it was only like 30 minutes long. So when you're also putting in stuff like this, it's just it's getting over the top.
Yeah. Get a Sanity interview. It was really good. Did you see it?
I did. I liked it. I liked the way that they played off of everything from the War Games. Good stuff.
And then we get Oney Larkin and Danny Burch versus the Authors of Pain. The Authors of Pain have a you know, score to settle in a way. They come out, and I love Larkin and Burch right off the bat, but the Authors of Pain, one move, stops them cold. And I thought this was just an awesome squash because Burch and Larkin look great while they were on offense for that 45 seconds. But, man, the Authors of Pain just cut it short and demolished them. Good squash. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, this is going to be the height of squash in, you know, 2017 NXT and probably in wrestling in general. I mean, you got the best at being on the losing end of squash matches, and you got the best at being in the winning end of squash matches for me right now with AOP and Oney and Stone. So, yeah, I thought it was great. And I kind of, you know what I like is the tag team of Oney Lorcan and Martin Stone, having Oney with the big number one finger and Stone with the two.
Yeah.
I think it's like, it's so stupid, but it works so perfectly. I was like, oh my God, that's so dumb.
It works in the NXT world, you know?
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, that's great. Okay, cool. So yeah, good stuff. And yeah, this goes into kind of my top 50 talk. I had Oney like, kind of ridiculously high in my top 50 because even here, 45 seconds, the guy gets the most out of every second that he's on the screen.
Yep, he really does. It's a shame they just beat him like a drum. Then we got Ember Moon and Peyton Royce. You didn't get this.
I did not see the match.
Royce and Peyton Royce and Billy Kay. Attack. Pretty much, they have an okay match. Then the Ember Moon goes over. Royce and Kay attack a post match. Just, you know, beat her up. You know, the angle is what made it. The match really wasn't anything. And then we get a straight talk with the Street Profits, whatever. And then, what do you think of that?
I didn't get that either.
Okay, well, you're lucky. No, no, that's actually okay. They're growing on me, the Street Profits, but I don't need vignette after vignette after vignette. I get it, but you know. And then we get the main event of Aleister Black versus Adam Cole. Cole does the job. What were you thinking here? What were you expecting that?
I think that they did a good job building up the match with the promos, with the battle of the two undefeateds, two guys who are obviously, you know, in line to be future champions, it seems. And so you're kind of getting this whole, like, where are they at in the ladder compared to each other right now stuff, which is pretty good, pretty cool. The match itself, I think, really suffers when you compare it to the main event from the week before. This match was really more of like a modern style bomb fest, kind of back and forth stuff. The stuff at the end, I don't know what the fuck they were going for. I mean, you open up the match and Black is doing some of his mat wrestling stuff. And I mean, just the last time we saw him in a big match against, Velveteen Dream, Velveteen Dream worked up to his level and really was looking good. Here, Adam Cole is just doing his shtick. It comes across.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but having watched it on the indies for years, it comes across tired to me. I don't know who these people are that, like, they lose it for this stuff in perpetuity. I get so bored with it so fast. It's the same people who can, like, watch the, you know, Matt Riddle versus Pentagon Bro versus Zero Merito thing back and forth forever. And they've seen it 6 or 7 times, and they just love it every time, and they're just yucking it up, and, oh, this is so great. And I'm just, how can you care about this for the 7th time, you know? I don't know how you can get into it. So, for me, I'm like, from the start, I'm just like, God, like, this was supposed to be it. It's supposed to be Adam Cole has been kind of taking it easy until he gets to WWE, and then once he's there, he's going to turn it up. But no, like, now the second that he's in NXT, he's still doing the same shit. Strikes back and forth look fine. Crowd's into it. But like I said, I mean, it just shows that these two guys are not on the level of, like, Ono and Gargano at all when it comes to just, like, psychology, getting a lot, telling a big story. Crowd's into it. The finish, I thought, was fucking weird and just kind of dumb. I don't know why Cole is screaming at Black while he's picking him up with his foot. I'm just like, that pickup with the foot thing was cool when it was like the person was knocked out, but if he's screaming at him, what do you got, what do you got, and then he just gets kicked in the head and knocked out, what was the point of the screaming? It just... do something else. Don't just get kicked in the head if you're conscious enough to do that. You would think you would dodge and not just lose. It just makes Cole look like a fucking idiot. It doesn't make him look good. It doesn't save him any face, and I don't understand what the idea was behind it, honestly.
Yeah, it felt like a total styles clash to me.
Yeah, that's it. These guys just don't work well together. And I think it didn't hurt Black, but it was dangerously close to affecting Black's aura as a star, having this match with Cole. And for me, it's kind of fucking crazy to have seen Aleister Black go from a really, really good match with someone like Velveteen Dream, who's, like, looked at as just, like, this rookie from Tough Enough, who whatever, to, like, having a not-so-great match with Adam Cole, who's supposed to be this indie darling and the next big thing in wrestling. It's really weird, you know what I mean? To kind of think about those things in conjunction with each other.
Yeah, it felt more this was a show where they edited it, where it was just about putting it on USA and exposing people who have never seen NXT, just giving it more exposure.
Yeah, and I guess that could make sense, that, like, if this was for a WWE audience, that you could see that someone who would only watch, like, WWE that's on TV, they might, like, get into something like this more. So I could definitely see that.
Yeah, well, on that note, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll come back to WXW, Broken Rules.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. And we're back with WXW Broken Rules. And we open up with Dragunov versus DeMack. And you know what? I like this match. I love the collar and elbow tie-up. Bump to the outside. Nice big bump by Dragon to set up the double I can't even remember, double Mac thing. That knee strike by DeMack was finished nasty, like it needed to be a finish. Interactive in the first interference in the first match, though, I'm always nervous about. Like, to me, I think I'm an old school guy at heart, and the first match should just set the table for the card. So having interference on the first match kind of gets me nervous, but I gave it 2 3/4. Enjoyed it. What about you?
I guess I liked it more than you. This card structure was weird, realistically, because it really felt like the first two matches were big time matchups, and then the third match felt like a cool off match. So I could definitely see what you're talking about having this as the opener. I think they're trying to get some stuff out of the way, but they're also trying to, because the Rise is such a big part of WXW right now that they're going to be involved in so much stuff that I think they're trying to pace them out in a way. So that's why you kind of got to have them in the first match so that they're not in like a bunch of matches back to back, which then they end up still pretty much being. I thought that the real story of this match is the drama. The action is fantastic, but the emotion and the kind of facial selling, the timing from Ilya Dragunov is fantastic. Ilya really pays attention to every little detail. Mac as a heel is really good here. I loved his kind of switch, but then I felt like when Ilya gets busted open in the ropes, I felt like the Mac, he was kind of doing paint-by-numbers heel work, where he's just kind of doing little shitty stuff here and kind of being a jerk. Normally, it would have been perfect in almost any other setting to kind of, like, show him as a heel. But when you're trying to play up that he's kind of this evil asshole, when you got a big busted open cut like that and he's not really focusing on working it over, it just shows that it's not realistic. Like I said, it's more that paint by numbers, this is how you be a heel stuff, instead of situationally taking advantage of something that a real evil asshole would, you know? So that kind of hurt the match a little bit for me there. Seeing what Ilya has become right now compared to remembering back when he was like when I first really got exposed to him, he was the first Shotgun champion. When Shotgun TV had first kind of started for WXW, he was really like a slightly he was like a serious version of the same kind of Russian cartoon character that Alex Kozlov was. And like with the two colored eyes and just everything about him. And then now he's this just beefy fucking wrecking ball with these huge lariats and this gigantic Moscow or Torpedo Moscow finisher that's become like the most protected move in wrestling is great. I really like the interference from Rise is just being completely treated like it doesn't matter as it they still allow Ilya to get the win, which I kind of like. So where you talk about having interference in the first match, I totally think that it would have been annoying. And if they had the match just end on the interference, I would have been with you that it's kind of upsetting. But then having the referee essentially wave it off and still give Ilya what's essentially like a clean victory in that he was able to get the win, even though they interfered, I thought helped make me less groan inducing by the finish. So for me, I gave it 3.5 stars. I think that DeMac needs some practice on actually being a heel because he hasn't been a heel very much at all and definitely not in a very long time. So he just needs to step up his game and really think, like I said, about not just trying to follow the steps of how do you be a heel, but think about what a heel would do in each individual setting while you're in the match. And it could definitely help improve. So, yeah, that's kind of my takeaway on the match overall.
Yeah, I think those are very good points. Then we got Alexander James versus... Who did he wrestle?
Jern Simmons, the big match.
Jern Simmons, yeah, that's right. What do you make of this?
I thought that this match is really a fantastic pairing. I think that these guys work super well together just because of the kind of different styles that they have. Alexander James being a lot more technical, a lot more of kind of just overall kind of, you know, not bare bones, but just your normal kind of wrestler. And then having Jern Simmons be more of a character guy with some brawn and some muscle, it really helped to where there was no down periods in the match because as they kind of go back and forth, there was no time for you to kind of get bored about anything because everything is different and kind of exciting and new because both guys are doing different stuff. I thought that really helped the dynamic of the match, so it flew by really nicely. Really liked towards the end when Jern Simmons is clearly just pissed off that it's taking so much to put this guy down. So he starts throwing him around. Jern has this really good kind of smugness where it's like this, it's a mixture of like, he's just completely annoyed with the fact that this guy just isn't, you know, that he's still wrestling him and he's not just fucking staying down and getting beat, but also that like, he's so much better than him that's why it's annoying that it's not just over. But able to still be a face, which is like weirdly impressive that like he can have that mix of smugness, but also being over with the crowd. And I like that this dismissiveness ends up catching him off guard. He gets hit with the brain buster, put down by James. That said, real basic match. I felt like the only emotion was that. Otherwise, there wasn't super great storytelling. I did, like I said, I liked the dynamic between the two helped for me to make the match exciting. But I need a little bit more to get completely into. That said, I got it at 3 stars. Really good stuff. Great action. You know, fast pace, goes by in a blink of an eye, but didn't like kind of make it up into that next level of great matches or anything.
I got it at 3.5, and I think James is a guy people should keep an eye out on. I think he's really good. I think he's putting it together right now. I like how Jurgen Simmons is standing tall early on. While James is trying to take him down. Love James seeing the opportunity to destroy the arm, and he does. Love the PK to the arm. Simmons with a hope spot only to get cut off, which I enjoy, and I really am loving the heat that James gets in the match. Simmons selling the arm on the powerbomb spot. James is just really underrated, and I thought they put together a really strong match here at 3.5 stars. Then that leads us into Ivan Kiev versus Lawrence Roman. What were your thoughts?
This is the one. It really, to me, it felt like Roman was kind of he should have been treated like a young boy who's lucky to be getting a title shot. And instead I felt like they went a little bit too 50-50. I think Kiev was trying to help make Roman look good, but I don't think that it was necessarily the right place on the card for that. I think that he should have been treated like a second-rate challenger, as if Kiev is trying to kind of get away with not having a real challenge to his title. And I think that this was bad placement for the card. This was probably a good opener for the show, but after you've had two, to me, really strong matches, I think that following up with this really made it even look even worse. Again, we talked about it, but I believe in building a show to having it get increasingly good as better. It goes on and not have like dead spots. And this kind of felt slightly like a dead spot. That said, I thought everything was really well executed. Didn't feel much drama. So I gave it 2.5 stars. And yeah, I think that if this was the opener, it would have felt a lot better. It wouldn't have necessarily been better, but it would have made more sense.
Yeah, I mean, I give it 2 stars. I felt this is worth junior heavyweight style. We do that. We see the mirror sequences. And then I'm like, this is a style that I've come to really hate in modern wrestling, the mirror sequences. Look, I know what you're going to do next type of stuff. And yeah, it's just not built on hate, which is fine, but it just feels so phony. And that's what I'm getting here from these guys. Lots of moves, but no way am I doing all these like different types of springs and moves. We do a lot of roll-ups for 2, a lot of roll-ups for 1. Yeah, it just felt like they were on 2 different pages. Like they had a way of how to work a match.
Well, and what hurts that too is you talk about it being treated kind of like a junior heavyweight exhibition match. And I mean, Kiev is in Rise, and a big story in the company right now is that Rise is like an invading faction of like some of the worst heels imaginable. And so the idea that this heel like this, that's just hated by the entire company, is going to have a match that has just no passion to it, just doesn't make any sense.
I'm with you. That leads us to the big main event. And I mean, I felt it was the main event. Walter and Thatcher versus Guns and Stone in a tag team no DQ elimination match. What were you thinking here? And this is coming off a hot angle where Guns and Stone pretty much put a cigarette or a cigar out in freaking Thatcher's eye. And Thatcher has the old eye patch gimmick going. I mean, I love the build in this, I'll tell you that much.
Thatcher wore that eye patch in multiple different wrestling companies, which is fucking great. This is old school as it gets, really. This felt like a real fucking blood feud fight, which is really nice. I think that they did a great job of having there be a different feel between this as a no DQ gimmick match and the main event as a no DQ gimmick match. This felt, like I said, real old school. This felt like a blood feud blow off, big time kind of street fight. This would be more of like what you'd call like a street fight or a lights out match, something along those lines in the old like kind of territorial days. That said, I mean, the action is phenomenal. Ring Comp are fucking just sick and tired of these punks messing with them, trying to take out his eye, and they're gonna make him pay. Jackson, I like, is being too stupid to realize what he's in for, so he's even like trying to pose and stuff early on and not staying focused, so he just gets the shit kicked out of him. Guns, on the other hand, shows that he at least has the intelligence to understand what he's in for, as he's trying to stay focused. He's doing everything he can, though, just to keep breathing in this match, basically, as he's just getting attacked over and over again. Jackson gets the chair. I feel like Thatcher's out too long from the chair shot, which I understand that they wanted it to be a setup for a big section of Walter on by himself, which was, you know, a really great part of the match. But I think that they should have done something to, you know, with Thatcher's messed up eye. They should have played off of something like that instead, rather than just he threw a chair in his face and then Thatcher was out for a long time. But then when Thatcher does return, he comes back and he's takes the eye patch off, fires the fuck up, cuts off pretty quickly. There's, again, more nasty violence. Thatcher mixes in some of his deathmatch roots, getting different kinds of weapons involved. Chairs, big power bombs through the chair, which is just nasty. Again, Rise try to pose, and Thatcher attacks them again, just kind of goes after. They're not going to get away with this kind of bullshit. Just amazing action. Thumbtacks get involved after Thatcher removes his eye patch. Thumbtacks are in here. Thatcher takes a nasty, nasty spot. Face down in the thumbtacks, gets curb stomped into him, and then wrestles the rest of his match with a thumbtack in the bridge of his nose. People forget that Timothy Thatcher kind of started out doing death matches. People also forget WXW used to have a long time working relationship with CZW. So, you know, this is not really new to WXW, but when they've kind of changed so much, you forget what their kind of, like, their history is. So seeing it, this stuff is just nasty. Really cool stuff. Guns just takes the most epic of ass whoopings after Jackson is eliminated. Ring Comp, he's able to come back here and there, even gets that crazy ass thumbtack spot on Thatcher, but eventually Guns gets put down. He has to be turning face. There's rumors. People think Guns is going to join Ring Comp. He refuses to shake hands at the end. But, I mean, they have to be doing something with this guy here. Because this is just fucking crazy. I gave this match 4 stars. The action is nuts. The spots are fucking crazy. The heat. The hate. The aggression. Everything in this match is off the charts. Walter and Thatcher are just two of the best wrestlers on the planet Earth right now. They work together so well, and they just really bring the most out of everyone involved with them. At this point, WXW is probably the best indie in the world, primarily just because of them, honestly. And it's just, it really is just fucking amazing. Like, it's just crazy how good these guys are.
I'm with you. I enjoy this. I think you liked him a little bit more than me. I think you liked it a lot more than me. I gave it 3.5 stars, but I thought this was one heck of a brawl early on. I love Guns and Stone after Walter's arm. Love the chair shot to Walter when the triangle was applied. Gun gets destroyed. Love seeing that. I thought for a brawl it went a little too long. Trying to get Guns over is gonna be tough. I don't think you can do it. It shouldn't be, and then I don't think they shouldn't be shaking hands at the end of the match like Walter wanted to do. This is a blood feud. Blood feuds don't end on handshakes. So I just thought there was some presentation flaws. But overall, I thought I was good, so I gave it 3.5 stars. That leaves us into this 6-man tag. What were your thoughts?
It's like a three-way, it's a tag team match with 3 teams. Right.
That's so, right.
It was a good break from the way everything was going. I mean, after that match, I don't know what you could follow it with other than something like this.
Yeah.
Good action. Kind of bummed because I think Francis Caspian should be treated better than this. And I understand that this is a big card with a lot going on it already. So you probably couldn't find another great place to put him. But, I mean, he was really kind of just a token high spot. And that was all he was really used for here. I mean, they talk about it. He's really their standout student right now. He's really a guy that should be getting a little bit more on a big show like this. But... again, this show already kind of had its focuses, so you can't necessarily always make everything work that way. That said, I think that everyone fit their roles really well, but I didn't get super into it. It was definitely a major buffer match, and yeah, it worked to get guys on the show. 2.5 stars for me, nothing egregiously bad, but just, you almost could have just not had this match, honestly.
Yeah. It was just there. I'm with you. I gave it 2.25. It was just all action, but it really wasn't a whole lot of story behind anything, behind what they were doing. No rhyme or reason. And then that leads us into Ginny versus Sexton Moth Martinez. Well, what are your thoughts?
I think that this was pretty good. It wasn't great. I was hoping for something. I was kind of excited having Walter on commentary to hear his kind of thoughts on Martina, but he really kind of ended up spending a lot of his time talking about the title match. I think Martina is kind of like the Europe's version of White Mike. The crowd really loves her. They're really
into her. Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Yeah, she's got a good gimmick. It works. She can wrestle. She's not terrible, but she also doesn't really need to. I like the spot where she gets powered up by beer. I thought that was good. The beginning, for me, lackluster start with the kind of just brawling around the crowd. It's like, I hate that in men's matches, so I'm also going to hate it here in women's matches. It just feels pointless. I feel like the match meandered a little bit, and then I feel like the finish really kind of came out of nowhere. And then to play off of the white mic comparison, I think that I heard Rico referring to something that that Martina was doing as a can opener. So that's kind of funny, because that's a white mic's finisher. I gave it 2.5 stars. I think they're doing a round robin women's title tournament, and this was, I don't think, a great way to start that off, honestly. I think a big part of the problem, too, is that that big-ass tag match with Ring Comp was just too much for almost anything to follow. That really probably should have been the main event, and I think that this, it hurt this match as well, that they had to follow that match, even though there already was a match in between. I still think that that was just too much for really anything to follow.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm sorry, I was just thinking in my head. We get this ladder match that comes up. I'm with on the girls match. I'm sorry, I'm getting sidetracked here. I like the character development here in the match, but it never really got going for me. It gave me like 1.5 stars. I don't know what it was. It just never resonated. But then that leads us into the ladder match. With who's this? My light just went off in my room here.
Chris John Klinger and Bad Bones John Klinger.
Yeah, okay. You know what? I like the concept of what they were doing here with the ladder, where they're using it to beat the living crap out of each other, and it wasn't about dives and big moves. So I enjoyed all that aspect of the hate of the how it is hate filled. It came across hate filled. Again, I didn't like how the interference lined up and got all involved in it, and kind of cheapened it in a way. But overall, I still thought it was good. But then it kind of, you know, we're getting all this hate filled, and then there's interference, and then they started doing some comedy spots that have no business in a blood feud whatsoever. And it kind of just derailed the ladder match for me. It was like two different guys were shooting. It was almost like Vince Russo and Jim Cornette were laying this match out in a way. And that's what we got, was it kind of ended up being a mess because they weren't consistent. It really dragged down the match. I gave it like 2.25, 2.5, all because they couldn't. I mean, yeah, the comedy spots in this blood, freaking, brutal, hard hitting match had no business. Am I overstating the comedy spots, or did it just? It just killed me here.
I don't disagree with you at all. I think this is where I talk about the two no DQ matches. They did good to make them not feel samey. Like the first one really had a clear, defined, like I said, it was more old school, old, like heated blood feud blow off. This felt more, I hate to say it, sports entertainment, kind of Steve Austin pay-per-view gimmick match main events that he did for every pay-per-view, basically, when he was the WWE champion. Felt more like that than it did like the other match with the blood feud end of a blood feud kind of blow off match. So that was good in that regard, that they felt different. They came in there with very clear delineations between different matches, but I can definitely see where you're coming from. It kind of turns into a dog and pony show. They're messing around with the ladders. Jokes on the heel and also on like one of the dumber heels. So, it's almost acceptable, but I get what you mean. I also think that part of it too, is that, for I think almost anybody who pays pretty good attention to WXW, like this Chris Colan title defense for Bad Bones here is kind of a throwaway title defense. So in some ways, while I agree with you that it's bad, it also I think that they did a good job of making a throwaway title defense feel bigger than just a throwaway title defense, if that makes sense.
They made it a ladder match.
Yeah, so making it a ladder match and adding in all this other drama with the kind of getting everyone involved.
And then the fact that they made it seem bigger to you than the fact that they did bullshit comedy spots in it. I think that's even more insulting.
I could definitely see where you're coming from there. I guess what I mean is that they made the match itself. I think they were trying to make more out of the match than was really there.
Okay.
And so... So, I mean, yeah, the comedy stuff... I don't disagree with you that the comedy stuff didn't need to be there, and this is not the place for it.
Do you feel it hurt the match or helped the match?
Oh, it definitely hurt the match.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of just making explanations for why I can see where they're coming from.
Gotcha.
Honestly. Is because I think to most everyone's mind, this match has a foregone conclusion, but you add in all this dog and pony show, and it makes it kind of just a little bit more exciting. You get people so that they forget that it's kind of a stopgap. You know that there's no way John Klinger's losing the title kind of match. So I think that's kind of the idea. Did it come off? I don't think so. I don't think that it worked. I think that the finish was good in that the Mac almost completely carried Bad Bones to the top of to win the title. The Mac is the newest member of Rise, so that does kind of solidifying him as an important member of the team, so that's good. But John Klinger is supposed to be the focus of the group as the champion, right? So you kind of had him barely be able to keep the title in a match that ends up with some comedy and some jokes and stuff. So I get where you're coming from. Another part of it too is that I'm going to have a low expectation when I'm pretty much instantly comparing it to like an Attitude Era walk and brawl gimmick pay-per-view main event, because those matches never really spoke to me. And so I see it very similarly in this match itself. That said, I think that for kind of, continuing the storylines, for pushing forward where you're going into next, you have the kind of cameo by Ilya, who's the really important, title challenger coming up. I think that stuff all kind of helps for moving forward. I think the production value was good, and the pre-match video package, the entrances are all super cool. I think if you're a big fan, and I've kind of had these conversations about, we had these conversations recently about could John Cena or Kenny Omega draw these fans, and there's a certain kind of fan that we kind of talk about who only really cares about WWE because they're the big time and their sports entertainment style and their big production values. I think that's what you're into, I think that WXW is probably the best indie for you. And it's also a great indie for me because they have great wrestling. So I think that they do a really good job of mixing everything. High production value, sports entertainment, great wrestling. That said, the main event doesn't always have to, isn't always going to be the best match. It wasn't for me here because it is somewhat sports entertaining. 2¾ star for me. I think that they made, like I said, I think they made a lot out of what's a bigger or what's a smaller match. And I think that is kind of, that's something to be proud of. Not proud of, but... That was good on them to at least try, because they could have just thrown this out here completely cold and had it just be nothing. And instead they kind of tried to add to it. That said, they probably, the focus of this match was that big time elimination main event, tag team match. And they probably should have just had that been the main event of the show.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the biggest takeaway of the whole thing.
Yeah. I ended up giving the show like a thumbs in the middle. And that's mostly because I felt it petered off after the tag match. And I felt the first half of the show kind of blew away the second half. So that's where I am at this moment in time. But man, I got to say, I absolutely love the Thatcher-Walter angle and stuff. And they really got a whole lot out of that. What was it? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle?
Yeah, I'm with you. Thumbs in the middle. The first half was great, and then it really petered out after that tag team match. I think that it would have helped them a lot to have just made that the main event. Just because it was clearly the most heated match on the show, and ended up really being the best match on the show as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. So, totally agree. It peaked way too early, the show. Man, anything you want to plug?
No, take out the top 50, listening to Lucha Undead, got some new episodes coming out, all the time, really. I mean, we have an episode come out every week. That's about it. Otherwise, just follow me on Twitter @LuchaUndead.
Sounds good. Follow me at Titans of Wrestling every Wednesday. Check me out on WorldCast. We take a look at WCCW over there on the network. And a big shout out to Chad Campbell for saying nice things about Timothy and I on Twitter recently. Meant a lot. Thanks, Chad. And everyone, have a great week watching some wrestling.